Construction work on a supermarket will begin on Monday. Sainsbury's has said the store on the site of the former GE Lighting light bulb factory in Rushymead, Leicester, should be open towards the end of the year. The Sainsbury's in Belgrave Road, Leicester, is to close. Staff will transfer to the new store and the old shop will be demolished along with Belgrave flyover. Project manager Alex Shearer said, "We're delighted to be making a start on building our replacement store in Melton Road. The development will give the area an improved food shopping offer, as well as creating a substantial number of full and part-time jobs. Our contractors will be following a strict code of conduct and a good neighbour guide, keeping disruption to an absolute minimum. As well as the 80,000 square foot Sainsbury's store and a petrol station, the site will have space for other business units and a £70,000 landmark on the junction of Melton Road and Troon Way. Highways work will begin early next month."
An appeal has been launched for unwanted tennis balls to provide emergency nests for homeless harvest mice. Torrential rain has flattened the tiny rodents' natural nesting materials, so rangers at Watermead Country Park are asking members of the public to let them have tennis balls as substitutes. Senior ranger Dale Osborne said, "We want to help the mice by using the balls as artificial nests. We'll drill small holes into the balls and they will be attached to a post at a height above the reeds. We need about 200 to place within the reed beds over the coming months, and we hope the public can help with donations." Changes in farming methods have driven the harvest mice, one of Britain's smallest mammals, from their traditional homes in fields to the fringes of parks and reed beds. In the park, recent flooding has flattened areas of the 8-acre reed beds. Dale said, "Watermead Country Park is one of their last strongholds in Leicestershire." He said the tennis balls would replace the mice's summer nests, which are occupied from May to October and used by the animals to raise their young. "Harvest mice do not hibernate and do not live very long in general," he said. "In captivity, they have been recorded as living to 18 months, but usually few adults survive a year. The harvest mice people see in the winter are more likely to have been born earlier in the same year. They spend most of their time in the winter underground. Harvest mice are the only mammals in the Northern Hemisphere with a truly prehensile tail, able to grip and hold on to things. They produce up to 3 litters of 1 to 7 young a year during the breeding season from May to October, abandoning the offspring after a couple of weeks. The young mice continue to use the same nest. Harvest mice feed mainly on seeds, fruit and bulbs, plus some insects, particularly in the summer, as well as roots, moss and fungi. They are preyed on by a wide variety of creatures, including weasels, stoats, foxes, snakes, birds of prey and each other. Dale said, "Unfortunately, some harvest mice have a cannibalistic tendency. People can take their unwanted tennis balls to Watermead North off Wanlip Road and deposit them in a container at the main entrance."
Housemates in court after police find cannabis factory. Two housemates are on trial accused of running a lucrative cannabis growing operation. Barney Jones and Tracy Gormley of Cornwall Place, Melton, appeared at Leicester Crown Court for the first day of their hearing yesterday. The court heard that when police raided the property, they found an upstairs bedroom had been converted into a growing room. There were 40 plants capable of producing 2 kilograms of the Class B drug, which could fetch up to £16,500 on the street. Jones, 25, admits producing cannabis on the basis he was forced to by unscrupulous drug dealers to whom he owed £1,800. This is not accepted by the prosecution. House owner Tracy Gormley, 46, a support worker for a housing association, denies producing cannabis between January and October 2011. She blames Jones for installing the growing equipment while she was out at work. She claimed in a police interview they had a row about it when she arrived home. She told officers, "I live in fear of Barney. I had no choice. I told him I'd inform the police, but I was too scared." Gary Short, prosecuting, told the court the pair were in it together. He said the business involved them growing the plants, harvesting them, selling the crop and banking the profits. This wasn't just a few plants in the airing cupboard, generating loose change. The police searched the house on September the 30th, 2011, and found the plants were watered and fed by a timed system with six overhead lamps. The heat from the lamps was controlled by fans, while the smell from the plants was controlled by an extraction carbon filter in the loft. During the search, Jones arrived at the house in a BMW and was arrested. His mobile phone texts allegedly referred to arrangements for another quantity of plants to be grown. The court heard Gormley had four bank accounts and deposited £38,000 in cash during the nine-month period on top of her salary and legitimate benefits. "It can only have its origins in cannabis production," Mr. Short claimed. The court heard that police visited another property owned by Gormley in Ambleside Way, Melton, which allegedly had equipment often used for cannabis growing in the attic. The prosecution suggested the defendants were in a relationship, but Jones denied this. He told the court he was just a lodger, despite having Gormley's name tattooed on his neck. The pair had been intimate on occasions, but not in recent years, the court heard. Jones told the court he was not a drug dealer and had never grown cannabis for sale. He said he had a substantial cannabis habit and had agreed to set the factory up because he feared his throat would be slit by drug dealers to whom he owed money. He said Gormley was not involved. Gormley, during her police interview, said she had nothing to do with the plants or equipment and that it was probably a money-making scheme for Jones. The BMW was hers, but Jones used it, she said. She blamed the entire operation on Jones, seeking to convince the police she had nothing to do with it, Mr. Short said. In a later interview, she explained her financial position, saying she had other income from buying and selling cars, selling £10,400 of inherited jewellery, a £6,000 lottery win, and a £6,000 compensation payout. The trial continues.
Home care trial proving success. A scheme to help keep patients suffering from chronic lung disease out of hospital could be extended. A trial in which patients are monitored via computer readings has nearly halved the number of hospital admissions over the winter. 49 people have been testing out the telehealth system over the past 15 weeks. They all suffer from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, which includes a range of conditions such as chronic bronchitis, emphysema, and chronic obstructive airways disease. Each morning, Frederick Footit, 70, switches on a touchscreen which is connected to the internet at his Northfields Leicester home. "It is really easy. I have to answer a series of questions about my breathing and whether I am coughing more. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes and then the information is sent to a specialist nurse who monitors the results." Mr. Footit has had COPD for about 20 years. He said, "I think the cause was a mixture of smoking and working in the rubber industry when there were no dust extractors. It was a terrific shock when I got diagnosed and it has got worse over the years." Mr. Footit now has to have extra oxygen around the clock. He said, "If I go away, I have to arrange for oxygen to be sent to where I am going and can't go abroad anymore. But this new scheme is helping me. I haven't been into hospital since I joined it before Christmas, and usually I am in and out of there quite often. Mr. Footed is one of 4,700 city residents known to have COPD. Up to 3,000 more have not yet been diagnosed. Rachel Braithwaite, a specialist respiratory nurse with Leicestershire Partnership NHS Trust, is responsible for checking the patient's information each weekday. "It is going really well," she said. "Each patient is asked questions about their health, and they also give me their blood pressure and oxygen saturation levels, so I can check how they are. We can help by advising patients to start antibiotics or other medication if they are becoming unwell. The scheme has really helped people like Fred. Since he started, he has been doing more exercise on his exercise bike and going out for walks. This is really helping his lungs and general health. Although you cannot reverse COPD, patients can do a lot to help to keep it under control. Each patient also has a designated health coach who regularly calls them to help build confidence. Managers at Leicester City Clinical Commissioning Group, responsible for local health services, who introduced the scheme, said it had nearly halved hospital admissions for patients who are part of the project. In the past, when most would have expected to be admitted to hospital three times, this has been cut to just over one admission per patient. There are plans to look at ways of expanding the service and possibly extending it to include patients living in the county.
TV to tell tale of forgotten hero. Comedian Bill Bailey is to tell TV viewers the story of Leicester schoolteacher Alfred Russel Wallace, a forgotten hero of natural history. Wallace, who died 100 years ago, aged 90, devised his theory of evolution by natural selection at the same time as Charles Darwin, but was overshadowed by his more famous contemporary. Black Books and Never Mind the Buzzcocks star Bailey will tell his story in a two-part BBC Two documentary starting on Sunday. The comedian said he was fascinated by Wallace's story. "This man changed our understanding of life on Earth by independently coming up with the theory of evolution," he said. "Wallace is the missing link in the story of evolution." Bailey followed in Wallace's footsteps, travelling to Borneo and the Spice Islands, where he was filmed catching frogs, meeting monkeys, and eating toasted dragonflies. The show, Bill Bailey's Jungle Hero, coincides with a series of events being hosted by the National History Museum in London to mark the 100th anniversary of Wallace's death. The natural historian and explorer, who was master of Leicester's Collegiate School in the 1840s, was the leading expert on the geographical distribution of animal species. Bailey said he was on a mission to get him the recognition he deserved. "Only by entering Wallace's world can I understand this obsessive maverick who risked his life on his relentless quest to crack the origin of species," he said. There is a memorial plaque to Wallace outside the Newark Museum in Leicester. Dr. Mark Evans, the museum's curator of natural sciences, said his Wallace contribution to finding the mechanism of evolution, natural selection, is enormous, and I feel he does deserve wider recognition. It's right up there with Newton and gravity and Einstein's theory of relativity. Although only in Leicester for a brief time, it is Leicester where Wallace met fellow naturalist and explorer Henry Bates at the Mechanics Institute.